Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio, where each week we talk with creative Mississippians. I'm your host, Leslie Barker, Arts-Based Community Development Director at the Mississippi Arts Commission. And today I'm talking with Allie Grant. Allie is a film and television actor. You might know her as Isabel Hodes on Weeds or Lisa Shea on Suburgatory. And she also just happens to be a Mississippi native. So welcome, Allie.
Oh, thank you so much. This is such a thrill and honor, truly. I am a lifelong listener and admirer and lover of MPB, and the Mississippi Arts Commission has been an institution of hope and inspiration for me and, you know, countless others throughout the state. So I truly feel privileged to have this opportunity. Thank you, and I'm so happy to be here with you.
We're just so happy to have you. I'm so happy this is our first time to meet in person.
Yeah,
we've been collaborating for a little while, but haven't been able to meet in person. So I'm very excited to be doing a face-to-face interview in these times.
That's the truth.
So we're going to go way back to the beginning.
Oh, boy.
And tell us where you grew up. Where in Mississippi were you born? Where did it all start?
Oh, boy. So like the David Copperfield version of the I was born.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
during a frigid, at the time, historical, not anymore, we broke the record, but at the time of a historical ice storm in Northeast Mississippi, mm-hmm. In February, I was born in Tupelo, and I lived there for the first 10 years of my life, and then around that time, my mom and I, we moved to Los Angeles. But it was growing up in Mississippi, I often refer to Mississippi as my phantom limb. It's I'm a seventh generation Mississippian.
Oh, wow.
So I wouldn't want to be from any other place on the planet. I feel so so honored to have the muddy waters of the mother Mississippi through my veins and through my family, and I feel it in every sense, and it and it informs not just the way I see the world, but hopefully the way I kind of make my way through it, which is to say, you know, a bit peripatetic and a bit meandering and winding with lots of swirls and eddies and, you know, cascading, free-flowing adventures. And but, yeah, my entire family is here, is from here. I feel like Mississippi and I are one in many respects. So growing up here, I was so blessed, and am so blessed to have just been surrounded by a remarkable community of educators, you know, starting at Church Street Elementary School in Tupelo. Every teacher that I had from kindergarten to third grade there, they were absolutely instrumental in every aspect of you know, cultivating and flourishing a human being, which is what our teachers do. But they also, you know, of course, as you know, everyone does, you know, tell children, believe in yourself and believe in dreams and all those kinds of things. The difference is, I knew they meant it. They were, and because you know, their love was proven in their actions. They were so supportive of everything that I ever dreamed up or thought about dreaming up. And, you know, so I've feel like, you know, I've been an actor since I was an embryo. Like, I just kind of came into this world with this love and with this mission and with this feeling and with this desire and need to find some medium of expression to make sense of what was happening and internally. And so externally, I was just, by the grace of God, just surrounded by just a community of angels. And so, Mississippi, it's my favorite. This is probably a bit of an uncouth thing to say, being from the land of the greatest writers in the world, but actually my favorite book is, it's not written by a Mississippi author, but Thomas Wolfe, you know, he's in North Carolina, but the book You Can't Go Home Again, and I think about that often, and especially when it comes to Mississippi, and now being back home after, with the pandemic. And it is true, you can't go home again, because home is a place that you could never leave. And so my heart's always here. So
you started here in Tupelo, and now you're back. You came back during the pandemic.
I did.
And you left pretty young.
I did.
So what led to that? What led you out of Mississippi initially?
I've just always had a, like, both a yearning and a churning, like, in my gut, like, in my being, to find some means to tell stories, share stories, listen to stories. And I think Mississippi, you know, it's just the perfect, breeding ground for listening to stories. And the only way for me to make sense of it was to share it with others. But, you know, that's the thing about our state that always just moves me, is that, we're always the last ones to recognize, the greatness that surrounds us, environmentally, artistically, what have you. And so I just felt this great calling and desire and need to go, out into the world, if you will, and tell stories and tell people about a life that we all experience, and in many ways kind of take for granted, because we have a very special culture here. I took a lot of begging and pleading and bargaining with my mother, but my mom knew, and my mom is, having her as my mother is the greatest honor and blessing of my life. Not only is she the best mother and my best friend, separate and apart from both of those things, she's also the best person that I know. And so even though I was, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 years old and all throughout my life, and I would, speak to her about my dreams. And, of course, she knew it, too. I was not shy about it. She was never minimizing and she was never belittling. And she believed in these dreams as a purpose. And so she said, well, we'll do it. We can at least try, Allie. And so mom and I, we loaded up and we drove to Los Angeles. And we were very fortunate. We had made some contacts along the way, like in Nashville and in Dallas, with local agents there who said, if you go, these are some folks you might want to reach out to. And so we did, and they met with us, and we signed a 6-month lease for an apartment in North Hollywood. And it was 400 square feet with one sink.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 6 months, and slept on an air mattress with a hole in it. And my mom said, Allie, we can leave anytime. I don't really know if I can do this. I don't know why you want to do this. I said, just please, let's please stay. And we lived there for 12 years.
So you're about 10 years old, is that right?
I was 10, yeah.
You're 10 years old. You and your mom load up. You move to L.A.
Yeah.
And you just, like, dive into auditioning?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. I know that sounds, like, again, so insane, but maybe it was. pretty much. We, like I said, we had kind of, you know, formed a coalition, if you will, of just people, like, throughout, you know, being in workshops and you know, anything and everything that, you know, I could be involved in with the performing arts, you know, it's statewide and all, you know, nationally. We did, and so through that we had met, you know, agents and managers who were gracious and kind enough to say, you know, if you come, give us a call. And so we did, and then we you know, signed with them, and then we started auditioning, and I was there for, you know, 2 weeks that summer of 2004. Oh boy, aging myself. At that time, you know, HBO had really taken off, but there wasn't a whole lot of scripted content that was on Showtime yet. It was still burgeoning and finding its footing of what it wanted to be and what it wanted to say. And so I auditioned for this, like, I believe it was actually billed as a possible reoccurring co-star role, which is to say, like, you have one line in this episode and we might bring you back for two lines for the pilot of Weeds. And I actually had two lines, and then they did bring me back later and I had three. So that was very, very exciting. And so, yeah, and I walked in, and honest to God, all I had on my resume was that I had been in plays at Church Street Elementary Theater, and that I had landed the coveted role of Mary in the church play of The Nativity Story, and that was it. And I got this part, the show got picked up, and I ended up, you know, spending the next 6 years of my life growing up and working on in that world and with those people, and it changed my life.
Wow. What was that experience like as a, were you 10 when you started the show?
Uh-huh.
What was that like, you know, being part of this brand new show with all of these pretty seasoned actors?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could articulate it, but the closest that I'm afraid I can get is that it was really just magical. It was like still, and yet it was also very I felt so at home. They were so kind to me, and you know, everyone, you know, I'm really, really fortunate that, you know, every experience that I've had in my career has, I've, you know, been able to, or, you know, or people around me have really cultivated a feeling and a sense of kinship and of family. And I really felt that growing up. So it was like, It was magical, and I was always in awe, it was one of those things that's like, I was in such a state of bliss and inspiration and of, like, belonging that I really can't give any sort of, like, real word articulation to it, because it was just, it just felt so right, and it was just, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And also I was growing up too, you know, I was in school and I was there with my mom, and yeah, it was just like the river herself, you know, in all of the, you know, wilderness and in all of, like, the, you know, of the majesty, it somehow all felt so right and was such a beautiful experience. So it was like the greatest adventure of my life that didn't feel like an adventure at all, because again, I was a kid, and so it was just like, just one day at a time. It was very special.
This is Leslie Barker. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show airs on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To access all of our past shows, subscribe to the Mississippi Arts Hour podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the Original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Leslie Barker with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and today I'm talking with Allie Grant. Allie is a film and television actor and just all-around theater artist. So Allie, you were telling us about Weeds being your first. It was your first big show, right?
My first job ever.
Your first job ever, yep. At 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And you did it for 6 years.
Yeah.
What did that lead to? What happened after that?
It really was the arrow that propelled me forward in so many ways. Not just, you know, in terms of the work itself, but in the people that I met along the way. So those are all, you know, relationships that I still very much hold dear and cherish, and you know, I made some of my best friends in the world there, and you know, a lot of, like, actually a writer from Weeds. I talked to him this morning. we're just, you know, and it's funny, he's a bit older than I am, not by much, and Weeds was his first job. So that's the other thing too that I think made it particularly kind of surreal, is that, you know, like I said, at the time the network was, like, you know, wanting to find, you know, well, they had found their voice, but they were really looking to harness it and to make it just as clear cut as possible. Mm. And so everyone was new. Everyone, it was really just like this, you know, sort of the wild, wild west in the best way. And so a lot of the writers on Weeds, it was their first job either in television, because a lot of them had playwriting backgrounds, or so in that sense, the theater and television and film, like all mediums, have always been one to me in a way. There's not been a huge sort of disconnect to me for that reason, because all of our writers, they wrote with that same kind of intention, you know, in the first job that I had. So with every job moving forward, I always approach things like you would approach a play, because that was how we did Weeds. It was how it was written and how it was shot oftentimes. And rehearsals were very key to us. So it was very much that same kind of, you know, ecosystem of development and creativity. And so a lot of those writers, it was their first job too, working in television and film. So I often say, like, we all grew up together, even though we're all at different stages in our life. In that particular aspect, we did. So with that, it created some lifelong, very deep bonds. And so moving forward, so I left the show when I was 16, or I was 15, soon to be 16, and I had made, you know, just by doing the whole working actor auditioning thing, you know, I had made friends with some other casting directors, and I auditioned for Suburgatory. Actually, at that time, one of the writers of Weeds had left, and he was working on a network show too, and he was saying, like, you know, you really should think about network television. And I was like, well, I'll think about anything if someone if someone offered it to me. But, you know, you have to audition, and it's not for the faint at heart. That's for sure.
Network television?
What's that? Yeah.
Is it very different?
It is. Oh, it's very different. Very, very different. Yeah. And literally in every respect.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In terms of the dialogue itself, the approach to dialogue, the revision process, shooting schedules. It's so, so very different.
Like yeah. an ABC versus like a Showtime type.
Yes, yeah, it's very different. And so, so anyway, he said, you know, you might want to think about that. And I thought, well, my God, yeah. And I'd love to win the lottery, and I'd love to, you know, look like Jennifer Lopez and a lot of other things if given the opportunity. But then the opportunity came, and like I said, you know, you go through these rounds of just arduous, they call it testing for a reason, because it tests your faith in humanity and everything else.
Oh, wow.
When you're auditioning for a network show, well, it's the same now essentially for I don't know, you can't even call it cable anymore, that doesn't exist.
We all have our streaming services.
Yeah, so it before it was like, you know, it was cable and network, but now it's like, you know, network and then everything else. So but yeah, so but when you're auditioning, so it's essentially the same, the process of auditioning is pretty much the same now, but back in my day they were very different. And so when I auditioned for Suburgatory, it was a series, like truly like a month long of testing, where you go in and you read, and you read for this board and then this panel and then these people and then that people, and you know, all of this sort of thing. So by the time you get the job, it's like you're so exhausted, you don't have, you know, you don't even have any energy to be excited. But believe me, we were very excited. I'll never ever forget getting that call, because it was just a difficult time in my just in my life generally, and just trying to, I mean, just being you know, just being 16 years old and just being a creative person, and always trying to, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this, just always trying to feel what you feel and be okay with what you feel. And it's hard. And so when Suburgatory came along and I actually got it, and I actually felt like I did something right, you know, and whatever, you know, whatever that means. It was just the most, like, humbling and exciting and joyful thing. And so, yeah, and then I was on that for 3 years, that show ran. And then while I was on Suburgatory, because we shared a network, I was very blessed and fortunate to have the opportunity to connect with some folks at the Goldbergs. And so they wrote a role for me there. And so when Suburgatory ended, it was just this really lovely, you know, natural sort of progression into my work there. But also when Suburgatory on the Goldbergs, I mean, and then, but also when Suburgatory ended, I was 21, and my entire life I've wanted to live in New York City. And it was like my window of opportunity. And so I went and moved to New York and lived there up until 2020, when all of our lives in the world stopped and changed and stopped again and changed again. And but, you know, the world never really stops. We all stop. But the world keeps right on spinning. So we're just not very good at spinning with it oftentimes. Sure. So Suburgatory really gave me that kind of foundation, with the Goldbergs, but also it really, that was my, you know, sort of going from teen to adulthood. And also Suburgatory is the very first job that I had as an adult, so the hours are very different, and just like the whole process in and of itself is complete, you know, shooting schedule, all of that is you know, there are no glove handling with any of that sort of thing. It's you know, you're in the trenches. And so that really gave me a source of strength to draw from. And so I felt ready to move to New York when I did. And I lived there for 5 years, and so when I would shoot, you know, the Goldbergs, I would go back, and then anything else, like there was a series that I did on Hulu, which actually the director of the pilot of Weeds, his name is Brian Danley. He and I have remained very dear friends, and he directed this other show that I ended up doing like a couple years ago. So
The All Night. I've watched that.
Oh, you have? I have. Oh, well, thank you. That's so nice.
You have a very fun characters in all of these shows.
Oh, yeah. that's so sweet. Thank you. So he and I have worked together many times since Weeds. And so all of which is to say, when I needed to go to LA to work, I did. But I lived in New York, and that was really, really important for me to have my Joan Didion, you know, transition of the West Coast to the East Coast, and then, you know, I'll go back to the West Coast. I'll go back to California this summer and hopefully start working on some things again. I hope and pray we're getting in a better spot with COVID. So if all goes well, and, you know, as I say, if God willing and COVID doesn't rise and the sky doesn't fall, hopefully I'll be back in LA this summer and fall working. But being in Mississippi during this time, it has been so fortifying and so nourishing. And because I haven't lived here day in and day out for an extended period of time. I haven't gotten mail here since I was 10 years old, I guess is the best way to put it. And even though when I was, you know, living in LA, I would be, again, all my family is here. So I'd come back, you know, every summer and for all the holidays and as often as I could. And that was wonderful. But being here, especially during this time, it's been one of the most powerful and profound and healing and transformative experiences of my life. And God, we are so, so blessed to live in Mississippi and to be from here. We carry a lot of deep, deep history and roots here, and there's so much that's calling out to us all the time. And if we're ever still long enough, and that's what I do fear with the pandemic, is that we're gonna lose this stillness, we're gonna lose this sacred silence that we've all been living in, and this, you know, incubator of protection. Mm-hmm. But if we listen long enough, she'll tell us. Mississippi will tell us, you know, where to go and what to do and what needs to be told. And there's a lot here. And I think she's due for a renaissance too. I feel a big artistic resurgence happening here. It's thrilling, like in my bones, in my gut. I feel something brewing and something beautiful happening here during this time, because we all came home. It really was like a giant homecoming. The people that stayed, you know, we all dug deeper, and then the people that left, we came back, and I think good things are on the horizon for Mississippi artists, and therefore the country and the world. So yeah.
Do you think that Mississippi's going to be home base for a while?
You know, I, like I was saying earlier, my favorite book being Can't Go Home Again, because you can't go home again because home is a place you never leave. What this pandemic has given me is, you know, with so much loss and so much grief, and I do use both of those words in, like, the purest and truest sense, because this has been a devastating, devastating time for so many, and I've certainly felt that too. But the greatest gift of all that it's given me is, for the first time in my life, I have a home here. My mother got married in the pandemic. She got married to my Papa Jerry, and mm-hmm. you know, we all have our little oasis together, and I know that I could leave today and you know, not come back for 10 years, which of course would never happen, but I know that I could, and I still have a home here, not a place that, you know, relies on any sort of conditions or, you know, isn't transitory, that I don't have to keep my suitcase packed up in or anything like that, or a place that, you know, doesn't feel safe or doesn't, or I, you know, where I don't feel welcome or anything like that. I have a place to call home now. And I will be forever grateful to COVID. So yeah, I finally have roots.
We're happy to have you here.
Well,
for
thank
sure.
You. Thank you. And go and come and go, you know, we all need to travel. And I'll go to LA and I'll go to New York when work calls. but we all need a home too. So, like I said, go to LA for, you know, a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever. Go anywhere, but just knowing that you can always come back.
This is Leslie Barker. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show airs on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To access all of our past shows, subscribe to the Mississippi Arts Hour podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. I'm Leslie Barker from the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'm talking with actor and Mississippi native Allie Grant. Allie, you've been away from Mississippi. You've been in LA. You've been in New York since you were 10 years old. You've been away. Yeah. The last couple of years have brought you back. And you've actually got some things going on here creatively.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's funny because before the pandemic, I mean, I feel like those are like the words du jour of like of everybody's life, like before the pandemic. But I had a project that I was working on that is about Mississippi and takes place in Mississippi. Mm. And we're very fortunate we had sort of fostered some goodwill and some interest there, getting that off the ground that I hope and pray is still there, you know, now that we're sort of entering a safer spot in the public health and all those sorts of things. So, so eventually, maybe I hope and pray sometime this year, we can get a pilot shot here. So that's exciting, and then, but more immediately, is that in May, you might know a little something about this.
Might know a little something.
I happen to be directing this brilliant play as a part of Theatre Oxford's 10-Minute Play Festival, written by none other than Leslie Barker
herself. You are too
kind.
Thank you.
The truth. I'm so excited.
And that's what brought us together. It's how we met and became collaborators and friends, which I'm very excited about.
Yes.
And you are very kind. Thank you.
No, it's the truth. I'm so thrilled. I don't even think I told you this, but I'm going to tell you now. When they announced, you know, the finalists and they announced the winners and all of that, you know, there was a meeting amongst the directors of, you know, sort of what are you thinking, what makes sense to you and all of that. And so, you know, what would be your preferred, you know, your first choice show? And I had been on the review side of things as a panelist, you know, in the like very, you know, beginning stages of the festival. So you're kind of like assigned like, you know, a group of plays that you read. So I had only read, you know, a particular block of plays, mm-hmm. and I hadn't read yours. So I just read a particular block and, you know, thought this works and this doesn't and, you know, so on and so forth. By the way, so many talented writers in this state. It's just unbelievable.
So for people who aren't familiar with what we're talking about, it's a 10-minute playwriting competition hosted by Theatre Oxford.
And it's one of the oldest in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that, and I entered it, as we see.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
One of the oldest playwriting competitions in the country.
10 minutes.
Short
playwrights. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, and so, you're assigned with this block, and I read some, and then when the finalists came in, I hadn't read any of the finalist pieces, and so, you know, when we're having this meeting, you know, go in, see what makes sense, and the only one that would open for me was yours. They all were like loading, downloading.
I did not know that.
Like, can't, you know, can't receive or like data not available and like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this is so strange. And I read yours and I was like, please, Lord, let me please have an opportunity to direct this play. And so I was quick to say when they asked if I had a preference, I said, yes, I do. And it's Jarring by Leslie Barker. Please be so kind. And they were, and I'm thrilled. It's going to be great. It's a two person show. And there's a lot of, you know, negative space in the piece. It's going to be at the Powerhouse in Oxford. And so that space in and of itself is very interesting because it's so kind of utilitarian that it can really be transformed into anything, anywhere, at any time. We were supposed to do it in February, then it got postponed to COVID. But I'm just so excited to get with these two great actors, and I'm just so excited to get in this space and get into your words and your piece and dive into your world that you've so beautifully and thoughtfully illustrated. It's really, I just feel so privileged. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm just thrilled that technology for those other plays didn't work for a minute.
It was just it's so like indicative of just like the divine purpose that it all, you know, well, that everything ultimately serves, but this in particular, it was like there really was just no other play I would ever. It's just a dream come true, really, truly. It's just I can't imagine a better piece or a better collaborator.
I'm thrilled that it worked out this way. Wow. And that it brought us to meet each other. And I'm interested to hear your perspective of taking off your actor hat and putting on your director hat and the differences for you.
Oh, well. You know, I love directing. You know, as an actor, it's like you're so invested in your story and in the other actor's story. You're really just invested in, like, you know, the person-to-person, you know, transmission of energy. But as a director, what's so exciting for me is being able to actually create a world. Of really being able to, you know, infuse things of like scent and touch and really building things from the ground up. You know, I'm very tactile in that way. You know, I'm a sort of sensory centric person inherently, but as a director, being able to incorporate that into the entire space and make the and also it's like as an actor, there's only so much you can do in a sense, and so you have less of a responsibility in a sense. You have less of a responsibility to get it right because you're really just getting it honestly. It, as an actor,
that's interesting. Yeah.
You know, so as an actor, it's like you just have to be honest. Like you just have to like just you just tell the truth, and the truth is as you know it, and the other actor is giving you their truth. So it's an exchange of those two sort of. It's as an actor, you're colliding with other worlds, and as a director, you're trying to find, you know, you're trying to define the whole universe in which all of these planets spin together. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's like it is about getting it right. It is about capturing it in a way that. Not only makes sense for the actors, but for the audience, and it's going to make sense to the sound designer and the lighting designer. And so it is more about the precision of it. In acting, it's you get it right when you don't know it. You know, it's the spontaneity of it. So, yeah, I guess to put it in more of an allegorical sense, acting is like jazz. And directing is classical. It's classical piano. You know, it's like this is the sheet music. And there are certain notes that you have to hit at a certain point or it doesn't work. So that will be, I'm thrilled. I'm very, very excited. And also just you know, being a creative person doing a creative project again that we all have been robbed of, you know, for 2 years. It's such a nourishing and like wholesome experience.
You know, and I think too, being in the field like theater, where it is so dependent on people being
together. Yeah.
It is very hard. It's like we've all been missing a major part of ourselves.
Totally.
As theater artists and performing artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or ensemble based.
Yeah. Well, work. And with that too, in the theater, it's like you miss that community because mm-hmm. the magic, not only, and that's not just like you said, not just with like an audience, but like we are together as a cast,
right.
as a director, like
right.
we're in rehearsals day in and day out. So the audience experience is a component completely separate and apart from
exactly,
you know, it's just a really like faith affirming experience to be able to be back doing what we're called to do for the people that we love and with the people that we love and hopefully, you know, somewhere along the way, and if we're lucky, everywhere along the way, just giving back the light and the hope and the love and, you know, the pieces of heaven that have been given to us along the way, and just try to bridge that gap between heaven and earth a little bit by taking folks, putting folks in their seats in the theater and taking them out of their heads. And
you know, we all need that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. God, yes. It's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth. That's something that you and I have also talked a lot about is, you know, I think the pandemic has been, you know, brutal, but it has been a very crucial, not just reminder, but wake up siren to how critical mental health is.
Yeah.
For everyone, and especially for artists. You know, when this is your medium, this is your safe space, this is your resource to exhale, and you don't have it. The mental health crisis in our country and in our state and just within our own community, it's a pandemic in and of itself. And so my hope and my prayer, you know, my grandfather, who I'm named after, his name is Alan Eugene. He had a plaque that he painted and that he wrote on himself after he had gone through an extended period of difficulties in his life. And he wrote, "God, thank you for letting me live and laugh again. But, oh, Lord, don't let me forget that I cried." And I keep it with me everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And if my greatest hope and prayer in all of this throughout the pandemic and for the rest of my life, as long as I'm living and breathing, is just thank you, Lord, for letting me put my feet on the ground this morning and waking up and to be able to live and really live and to laugh. But don't ever let me forget that I cried, that we all cried. And we'll probably cry again, but we know now, if we didn't know it before, we know now, and it's particularly important with us doing this interview during the Lenten season, it's okay to grieve and it's okay to mourn and it's okay to feel all that you feel because Sunday's coming and we always have that light to look forward to. So that's, you know, I think we got some good stuff coming to our state and to our artistic community, and I'm just so blessed and grateful to be part of it.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Join us each week for Everyday Tech on MPB Think Radio. We have an IT expert, a computer repair ace, and we troubleshoot your problems on the phones as well. Everyday Tech, Wednesdays at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Download the podcast now or listen on YouTube on the MPB Think Radio channel.